Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Conscious Vibe Podcast,
where we elevate intellect through conscious dialogue
while exploring race, politics, business, and culture.
I'm Dr. Daryl L. Jones.
And I'm Charles D. Mitchell.
Chiggity Charles.
What was that?
Just wanted to break it up a little bit.
Yeah,
okay?
Clearly you did. You broke it
is
up.
Is that all right?
I mean, can I? Hey, look, hey, whatever you want to do, man. I'm good.
Man, how are you, sir?
I'm great.
It's busy as hell these times, isn't it?
Man, I can't tell you. It's unbelievably busy.
Seriously, it's...
It's crazy busy. It's crazy. You know what? I'm good. I'm thankful for it.
Yep.
I appreciate it.
Yep, I get it. So we have a special guest today, Carolina Gonzalez.
Aren't they always special?
You know what? They are. Some more special than others. I can't think of anybody who's less special or more.
Well, of course not.
We have a special guest.
Super special.
Yeah, absolutely. So welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. You know, what is the way you would prefer we pronounce your name today?
Well, my name is Carolina, but I do like Carolina.
Okay.
If you
you'll settle for Carolina.
Okay. A lot of people call me Lena, though, but because a lot of people say Carolina.
And it gets them out of that.
Yeah. So I used to say, it's Lena. And someone's like, I'm just going to call you Lena. And it just kind of stuck for the past 10 years.
I'd be more worried about getting the R right.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's
what I'd be more concerned about.
It's just Caro. It means expensive.
Caro. Yeah. Carolina. That's
right. Carolina. Okay. Sorry. We'll go with Carolina.
Perfect.
So you have a really interesting background. And, you know, Charles and I spend a lot of time talking to guests about culture, flourishing, self-preservation. These are conversations that we've had. Mm-hmm. Your journey from being born in Mexico mm-hmm. to, for the most part, being raised in the United States and in Arizona has been a very interesting one. Can you talk to us a little bit about that journey? Maybe take 5 minutes and just tell us about where you were born and then the transition here to the U.S.
Okay. Well, I was born in Guadalajara in Jalisco, Mexico. I lived in a small town an hour and a half away from Guadalajara. So it's a small mountain town. Call mm-hmm. it a pueblo. It's next to one of the biggest lakes in Mexico, Chapala. So it's just a beautiful town, but everybody knows each other. I bet everyone's related in some way, you know. So I lived there until I was like 3 and a half, moved here close to 4.
By yourself or did your family
come? With my mom, my dad, my older sister, and my middle sister. So it was 3 girls, my mom and my dad. My mom was born in California, and my dad was born in Hawaii.
Oh, really? Okay, so your mom was born in California, Southern or Northern Cal?
Oxnard.
That's kind of like
mid-northern. Yeah. But my grandfather, he was part of the Bracero program during the World War. So the United States needed workers. So when all the men here went to war, they needed men to come work. So he signed up for the Bracero program, and they brought him over to California. And then he would go back and forth, but then later they all moved to California. And once my mom was 18, graduated high school, they moved back to Hawaii. But so her and my dad met when they were like 8 years old. Huh. Yeah. So they would play with, like, she would play with my aunts, and so they all kind of knew each other, the families.
Okay.
Yeah. And then, so we moved to Globe. We lived in a tiny, tiny little house. I shared one bedroom with my sisters. We had a bunk bed. So we called it the Snow White House, which is like a tiny 2-bedroom house.
Okay.
And then finally my parents saved up, and we moved to Chandler. And we got a home in Chandler. No, Gilbert, sorry. We got an apartment in Chandler, then a home in Gilbert. So it was just, you know, they were working hard to buy us a house, got that house, and that same house they've been in for 20-some years.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. And so we'll kind of move a little bit forward mm-hmm. here. Today, you are the single mother of 2 children,
yes.
4 and 6, is that correct?
They're almost 4 and 6.
Yeah. Almost 4 and 6. Boy and a girl.
Mm-hmm.
You have your own business,
yes.
And it's in the creating signs for folks. You call mm-hmm. them signs. It's art.
It's art, right? Yeah, home decor,
right?
Anything. Yeah.
And then you're also in the hospitality industry.
Mm-hmm.
We've spent some time in the past talking about some of the challenges as it relates to culture, some even political,
mm-hmm.
that can be a deterrent for a young Mexican girl and or woman
mm-hmm.
who's fighting these headwinds and trying to figure out who she is and establish an identity and provide for her children and not necessarily experience some of the same things you did.
Yeah.
Can you talk a little bit about what do you find as the major challenges presented today in this climate?
I think just our culture in general. Our culture is very like machismo. That type of culture, I feel like, weighs women down in it. So I grew up in a family where the woman serves the man, which is fine. I believe in serving your husband, but to a certain extent. You know, my parents don't believe in traveling a lot. My dad, he never let us leave out of state to college. He wouldn't even let us go to Flagstaff for college.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
And why was that?
I think just for safety reasons. Mm-hmm. I mean, when I got accepted to school in New York, I told him, and that was just, he never congratulated me. He just said, okay, well, you're not going. That's all he said to me. And he used to tell my mom, if anything happens to her, it's your fault. Like, he just kept blaming, like, if anything happens to her, it's your fault.
So he had nothing to do with it.
No. So, you know, I was 19. So after a while, I was like, well, I'm just going to stay here. I can't move by myself. And that's when.
Sorry, do you know what that's rooted in? I'm just curious.
That's a great question, Gerald.
I don't know. We talked to my family in Mexico, and even like his siblings were like, why would they don't know why he's like that? I have, you know, aunts, uncles that who enjoy traveling and that are, you know, a little more open about things. So I do think that weighed me down, and just like also being in a very religious household, very Catholic, Mexican, traditional. Everything's kind of based on religion and. You know,
that institution of religion. Yeah,
that institution.
And a lot comes with that because there's a lot of European worship steeped in Catholicism.
Yeah.
Right. That comes with it. Peter, Paul, Mary, etc. So what was the imagery like for you growing up in that household? Was it literal around Catholicism? Was there a lot of was that reflected in the home?
I mean, absolutely. Any Mexican. You know, I saw an Instagram video the day making fun of it. Like, in a Mexican house, there's, like, a Virgin Mary here, a Jesus here. It's, like, everywhere, you know.
Were they Mexican?
Yeah.
The images were of Mexican people?
Well, it's very Catholic, the Virgin Mary. It's, no, not Mexican people. It's Jesus Christ. It's Virgin
what
Mary.
What was the imagery?
Yeah.
Oh, I mean.
You can say
I mean, white, I guess.
Okay. So even that dynamic is almost like you just don't think twice about it.
Mm-hmm.
Right? It's like. Peter, Paul, Jesus, they're all white, right? Which we can have that conversation.
Just go back
almost
to
impossible, but
the terrain,
exactly.
The climate, you know, a lot of things that just wouldn't make sense there.
When did you start to sense this was competing with critical aspects of your identity?
Just growing up, I felt like a lot of the things they were teaching us were kind of like,
Did all of your sisters feel that way?
Growing up, I know my oldest sister did, but we kind of all changed as we grew up too. So definitely, you know, my middle sister became very religious. She became very, very involved in the Catholic Church. My oldest sister came out when I was a sophomore in college. So
as a lesbian?
Yeah, as a lesbian. That was really hard for our family. But also just seeing like that reaction, like, well.
Was it hard for you?
Yeah, because it definitely caused, I mean, it's harder for my sister, obviously, and, like, seeing her go through that. I felt like they tried to keep some stuff away from me, too, because I was younger. I mean, I think I was, like, 15. But just seeing, like, we can't talk about it. You know, they don't accept that. We love the sinner, but we don't love the sin. Like, you can be gay, but you can't live upon, you can't act on it. So. The priest told my sister that she was going to have to live a very lonely life. Like, we love you, but you're going to have to live a lonely life if you want to be, you know, good.
What was the race of that priest?
White, Spanish.
You, so when did it start to, I'll just ask, maybe rub you the wrong way. When did you start to feel like, you know what, this doesn't feel right?
Just, I mean, little comments that my dad would make. Oh, like, well, if we had a brother, I bet he wouldn't have to wash the dishes. And like, yeah, you're right. You know, just certain little comments. The way that my mom would be treated, just very emotionally. I mean, it was emotionally abusive for sure. with us as well. It's always just like whatever we wanted to do or be when we grew up, it was never like, yeah, you can do that. It's more just like, why do you want to do that? Why don't you do this instead?
You never felt empowered by
it. Never. Absolutely. And even like, you know, my cousins in Mexico, I would hear them wanting to do something and my dad would be like, I don't get why they want to do that. They should just do this. They always push me to have an office job and I was like, I don't want to have an office job. I make more money doing what I'm doing. I'm active. I'm talking to people.
Meeting people, yeah.
Yeah.
What, from a standpoint of social economics, where did your family sit?
I mean, obviously moving here from Mexico, lower class. My dad worked a lot, but that's his love language, and that's what he always said. Like, I worked hard for you guys. I worked for you guys. I put a roof over your head. I remember during the recession, my mom was thinking about getting a second job because I knew money was tight.
So she was already working?
She was working, okay. Yeah. So she's always worked for the same company for a long time. And she does insurance, and my dad is a truck driver. So he, you know, drives semis. He does the alfalfa, like the double semis.
And there's money
semis.
In that.
Yeah. I was going to say, yeah, that doesn't sound like middle class to me.
There's money in it, but with the correct company.
I got you.
You know, I think he always worked for a friend. And I always tell him, like.
I guess we made the assumption he was, yeah.
Yeah, no, well, there no. are some truck drivers you know, that make
could,
a lot of money. Yeah.
You could certainly be, I mean, even if you're lower middle class, I think, you know, because I would always think that, you know, growing up, I never thought we were, you know, the poorest people around, but I didn't think we were wealthy at all. I mean, I always say lower middle class. And even that to me signifies, you know, both parents in the home who are working and working in what I would call, you know, modest jobs where, you know, you at least had this steady income, mm-hmm. right? Insurance, you know, man, mother, unless she was outselling insurance and trying to like earn money that way in mm-hmm. commissions, probably had a pretty steady income. And your father probably has pretty steady work, which mm-hmm. I think differs a little bit when you look at socially economic people who are at the lower ladder where income is very sparse. And that job is, you know, certainly a lot more menial in terms of like the type of work they do.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I don't. What I hear you saying is mm-hmm. he worked for a friend.
I think it was a friend's company.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I always would tell him, like, hey, there are more opportunities with these companies.
Right.
You can make $100,000 a year.
Exactly.
Like, truck drivers make really good money. Like, no, like, just very complacent. And that's not what I want. My parents are very complacent, and I don't want that for my life.
So what are you doing now that makes you feel like, you know what, the path I'm on is the right path, not just for me, but for mm-hmm. my kids?
I mean, sometimes I struggle with that too. Like, you always definitely, like, I doubt, like, is this the right thing? But, like, career-wise, for a while I was struggling. But I'm on the right path right now because I can just feel it. This is something that I'm passionate about, that I've been working hard towards, opening my new business. And also just I know I feel right because I am making the steps to have a better future for my kids. Mm-hmm. Like, I've seen what affected me growing up. As a child, and I want to take those steps to better that. I create boundaries with my family. I talk to them about certain things that I don't want them to say in front of my kids, or I feel like I'm on the right path. Talking to other people really helps me. My sister and I are very, very close. Her and I are kind
which,
of...
Which one?
The oldest, yeah. Okay. We're the black sheep of the family, so we're very close.
We're the black sheep of our family, too.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, we're all black sheep. so wow. So do you find, you said you struggle sometimes. Mm-hmm. Is it a daily struggle or is it in the moment struggle once a week, once a month?
No, I think it's definitely, because I struggle with anxiety. And obviously like depression hits in every now and then as well. So I feel like on days where I feel low, I can second guess myself. Mm-hmm. But you have to remember that like you have good days and you have bad days, and that doesn't mean that you're on the wrong path. So
what does that look like for you? Anxiety, depression, like when you, can you verbalize what that, not necessarily what it feels like, and I guess that may be part of it as well,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
but what does it look like for you like on those, in those moments, those days,
how
do you show up?
With anxiety, I go through my phases. My heart is always pounding, mm-hmm. pounding. Okay. I can't eat. Last month I went like 24 hours without eating. I can't eat. And that's also something too, is that so with my kids, I gained 80 pounds with both of them. So I gained a lot of weight. And that was always, you know, once I started slowly losing weight, people would comment on that. But the reason why I was losing also a lot of weight was because I was still living at home with my ex. So I was in that toxic relationship with my ex that is not good for your mental health.
So there's another headwind.
Yeah.
Right. I was going to say, what triggers are there? Like headwinds, what's the trigger for, like, you know, when you go to that place where you can't eat for 24 hours?
Maybe like a certain life event. You know, I was struggling with my serving job last month, and that kind of creates anxiety. But even being at work, I'm so busy at work sometimes that I can't eat. But it's better now. Like, I have my appetite back, but I just hate when people comment on that. Same thing as well, like my dad saying I look anorexic, but not actually being like, hey, what's going on? You okay?
Yes, the imagery for him.
The imagery?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
The image of the optic of you losing weight, not what's the source behind it. What's the origin of it?
But I make comments about it. Like, I'll make comments to my mom about it. So that's why I got a personal trainer in 2020. Because I really wanted to eat. I was like, I'm getting a personal trainer so that I can gain an appetite. And I did. It was great. I loved it. I got in shape.
So wait, your father, the comments your father, was he making comments that you were too heavy or that you...
Too skinny.
Yeah. You know, I was going to say that. I think that's cultural in a lot of respects. I've seen that. I mean, I've always been relatively slim most of my life. And then when I was in law school and studying for the bar exam and just like eating and drinking way too much beer. But anyway, I think that there's this perception. I remember when I really started getting into fitness and trying to get in great shape, and we'll go home and, you know, we'll be around family and friends and, you know, the comment would be, wow, you're so skinny. And, you know, I'm like, you know, kind of an asshole. I'm like, actually, you're fat. You know, and it's just a different perspective, I think, around what healthy looks like. And I think there's a complete flip-flop around what health should be and wellness should be in our communities, you know, black and brown communities sometimes. And I think particularly when you're like in the, like in the South where I grew up, speaking from that perspective.
Where you eat everything on your plate.
Where you eat everything on your plate. That was one of the things growing up that was always a big thing, which was you can't leave that dinner table until you ate everything off that plate. And so I think that shows up and isn't, you know, it's not a great thing, right? And I think it does more harm than good, particularly when we talk about, you know, social determinants of health and how people, you know, progress through life and what these things, where they show up with diabetes, with heart disease, stroke, cancer, all those things are tied to excess weight, you know? And so we have this thing where health is, we think we're being healthy, that healthy is you need to have meat on your bones, which is when it's the exact opposite.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, when the pressure is coming from parents, I'm sure it feels a lot different than coming from folks we barely know, right?
Yeah.
Or that we just kind of intermittently have exchange with. So you mentioned your ex. Do you feel like that's part of your battle now, too, as it relates to flourishing? And when we talk about flourishing, to simplify what we mean is optimizing yourself, being the best you can be as it relates to spiritual, economic, emotional, intellectual, and physical. Just being the best you can be.
Yep, well-being.
Yeah. So do you feel like, as it relates to your relationship with your ex, and your ex is the father of both of your children, right? Does that allow you to flourish, or is that an impediment to you trying to
It's an impediment.
Flourish? Okay. So you got a lot of headwinds
you're
dealing with, right?
There's a lot of impediments, which is why I feel like things always take me a little more time, because I always have to figure out everything on my own. Especially with the family that I have, and you know, even with my ex.
Yeah.
Because I feel like, you know, he's always wanted to keep the family together, so there's like that other.
Meaning you and the children.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I do think it's an impediment, and then also just having parents that believe that you should stay in that relationship, for your kids, regardless of what, regardless of what you go through, regardless of everything that I would say or like things that would happen.
It's a damn imagery again. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's also just like, what is so and so going to, they're just more worried about what people are going to think, people in their town, people in the family, people, it's, but, and also I was kind of the first one in the family to do stuff like that. I was, so
with my stuff like what?
Break out of things. Okay.
Well, your sister, your older sister was.
So she is the first in our family on my dad's side and my mom's side to come out. Nobody else in her family. She's the only gay niece, whatever, grandchild.
Yeah, that's
she still has to, she has to hide that from my grandparents, from my abuelita in Mexico and my grandma and grandpa here.
And I'm sorry, we're going to press on that a little bit. When you say she has to, what do you mean by that?
For like with my grandparents, it's they, my grandpa gets very sick. He also has a lot of like anxiety and things like that. And when he gets sick, he has stomach issues and he just, but they don't want him to go to the hospital.
What happens when your older sister gets sick?
You think that would send him to the, that's,
This is
I'm imagining, she's got her health to manage too, right? This is a really bad joke, but I'm imagining like Fred Sanford, you know? You remember?
Have you ever seen Sanford?
You remember Fred Sanford?
No, but
okay,
I'm
good. You know, he grabbed his heart.
I'm coming to get you. Come to get you. Okay, you don't. Yeah.
Okay. I'm afraid that would happen if she found out.
Yeah, sorry. But your sister has her health to manage. You have your health to manage, right? Which I think is, you know, hats off to both of you for, because human crisis is oftentimes rooted in these competing self-identities.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a daughter. I'm a girlfriend. I'm a mom. I'm an entrepreneur. And when they all compete, that can be a recipe for disaster. Mm-hmm. So you're on this road to try and operate with one identity.
Yeah.
Right? So hats off to you for that. Hats off to your sister for realizing who she is and managing that. And I personally just hope she gets to the day where she doesn't feel like somebody else's problem is her problem.
Yeah. And she got married this year too. And it's still like,
you know what? And I'm not, she shouldn't have to hide that from anybody.
Yeah. Ever.
Right?
She's happy. My younger cousin just got engaged. She's 20 something living in Australia. And it sucks hearing, you know, them talking about that in front of my sister and her wife.
Because it's hidden.
Their wedding is hidden.
One person gets to celebrate while another person doesn't.
Like my grandma didn't know that we were all in Mexico. That, you know.
You know, that's for her to deal with. Even if she's 96. I mean, you know what? Deal with it. I mean, I hate to say it, deal with that shit.
And the excuse that I was given, like, from my mom was, well, you don't go visit them as much. You don't have to deal with that. I have to deal with your grandmother, and I have to deal with
the aftermath.
But also, it's, you know, it's, I'm like, well, it's your daughter, and you need to, you know, back her up, and you need to, she talks a lot of shit.
So. And you know what? I'm here for it. I mean,
yeah.
Deal with it.
It's hard. But my kids, like, are going to out her one day.
It's just hard to hear, right?
You know? It's hard to hear.
And families are the most complex of anything, right?
Yeah.
Families, you know, talking about therapy, I mean, families are so dysfunctional in so many ways. And I think we create it because we aren't ever willing to face reality about what happens in each other's lives. And
there
I think when we do that, we put up these walls and we create this sort of life scenario that we think it should look like as opposed to what it really does look like and live authentically through that.
Mm-hmm.
And all it does is damages relationships. It keeps people, you know, arm's length from where they really could be in terms of supporting and loving one another, which is the whole point, right?
And at some point, if I'm a parent, who I want you to be as my child doesn't matter anymore.
100%. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
it doesn't matter anymore.
It's like you raise them and let them go, right? And so whatever they are.
Hats off to you for just being a pioneer and a pioneer for your kids.
Thank you.
Which is more important than anything in terms of what they see. Because, again, I would imagine just looking back, some of the decisions that you made as an early adult were a function of coming out of that environment, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now you look back and think, okay, might not have done that, but I also know we don't sit here and make the same mistake twice or three times, right? So you're doing that, which is awesome.
Yeah, I know that's a really big deal. I mean, look, to have two young children and to make the decision that you're better off on your own with them, that says a lot.
That's huge.
It's massive. And to have the strength to move on from that and keep moving in the direction you're in, it says a lot.
Yeah.
Thank you. And we still, I still co-parent really well with their dad, so he's still very involved, and we share them very well. And but you know, I also keep that close relationship because I don't want.
We have to. He's the father of your kids.
Yeah, and maybe I want control want in a way of like, I tell him things like, "Don't say that in front of Luna or my daughter. Don't say that."
Because does he look like Jesus?
But you know, just certain things.
He does. So I mean, bad. I think he looks like Jesus.
That like can come out. That I'm like, hey, that's not okay to say. Or you know, he knows out of most people that. How my relationship with my family is. He has seen things like straight on that it bothers him how I'm treated sometimes.
Have you seen things with his family that bother you?
Yes.
Okay.
Absolutely. That was always a struggle. I struggled.
But that may have felt normal to you, right? Because you were coming out of a situation too where.
Yeah, I mean, I was really close with his mom, I feel, at first. It's crazy because she had actually traveled to Europe with my sisters before. And then we ended up finding that out, like, the day that I met her. And I'm like, wait a minute. Like, I've seen you in a picture. It was very odd. Like, small world.
Really?
Yeah. Really, really weird. But so she, and again, same thing. So I was like, okay, you guys are Catholic. Like, you know, good family as well. It was fine, but things, you know.
Things come out, right?
Things come out, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Who you worship and why and all that kind of stuff, yeah.
Yeah, just a lot of judgment as well. A lot of like political judgment on
there
that side.
Yeah.
Yeah, political judgment. Him and I had a lot of different political views.
You love Trump.
Trump 2024.
Okay, whatever.
I do not. I do not. But that was
the went out on camera.
Charles' face right now.
Right.
Hey, look.
Exactly.
But no, but it is hard because, you know, it's 2020, man, that divided my family so much. It divided, you know, even just in, I had mentioned to you before in 2016, the shooting of Philando Castile. I remember I was pregnant in the car on the way to like plan my baby shower with my ex and we're fighting about it. Like we are fighting about it in the car.
What's there to fight about?
Just different, you know, there's always that, well, he should have, what's the word? He should have obeyed the orders. Or I'm like, no, like, watch the video. I get very passionate. It's not okay. Like, I was, yeah.
Not okay.
So people always make certain comments, but they don't actually watch the proof. They don't watch the videos. They don't. It's still not okay.
Yeah, we're not very good in this country about understanding facts and how we get them and how we formulate our own opinions about things as opposed to whatever we're shown in the media.
Yeah.
Whatever we're told the real story is. So it's one of those things that is really led us to where we are today, which is, to your point, I mean, not just households, obviously, but a very divided nation.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's just because we're not intelligent enough as a country, certainly not emotionally intelligent enough to really have our own perspectives and see what really is occurring and happening to us, because we allow that to happen.
And I feel like with my family, it's very, it's all based on religion. So with whatever political views, whatever political party, it goes back to Catholicism. It goes back to being pro-life. You vote pro-life, everything, you know, I struggle, I'm like, well, there's other issues happening in the world, you know.
Well, and, you know, part of my premise is you cannot worship Catholicism and not worship Europe and everything that comes from it. They go hand in hand when you really start to get down to it because you can't remove the imagery and have that conversation. But if we truly knew the roots of Christianity, which are based in Africa, but that homework is never done here in the Western world, it starts to scare people when it gets done. So with that, if it was simply Catholicism and religion and but you always have to peel that onion back. And like you talk about, you walk around the house and you see these dead white people on your wall. You may end up marrying one, right? Or you may end up, I mean, that's kind of how it works. But, huh? What?
No, you're right. You're right. I've got things running in my head too. And like, yeah, we, you know, have dead white people on the wall and a 12 pack of beer in the refrigerator, but that's a little stereotypical. So yeah. I shouldn't say that. Or, you know, I had to, I was, you made me, you didn't make me, but.
But I also too, like I grew up with that as well. And I do, people judge Catholicism as well because we idolize Mary and we idolize certain things. But for me, like Mary, I do have respect for, you know, the Virgin Mary. I don't know if it's because I grew up with that in my.
Was she a virgin? Did I say that?
Well, did she exist? I think is the real question.
I think I've read too many books.
But for me, like I have always had like a type of comfort with, you know, I have a necklace with her. Like it does show a type of comfort. She was a mother. She loved her son. Is everything in the Bible true? I don't know. I've never read it, and I will fully admit that. My mom's always told me to read it. There are still certain things that I hold on to that are special to me, but I do question Catholicism a lot. I question the, what's the word?
Accuracy of it?
Accuracy, but I also, for me, it's the hypocrisy of it. That is what kills me.
What do you find hypocritical about it?
Well, everyone knows the Catholic Church. I mean, it's not just the Catholic Church. It's different churches, you know, in the world.
Yeah, but
you
could take but, that but especially the Catholic Church.
Especially the Catholic Church, though.
You mean like messing with the...
Yeah.
I mean, come on.
You weren't an altar girl?
I wanted to be. I remember one time aren't I wanted to be an weren't? Altar girl.
Aren't you glad you weren't?
Yeah. Oh, my mom probably regrets not letting me be one.
Yeah, she does? Yeah.
No, it was actually a punishment. She didn't let me be an altar girl because I did something, so well, she grounded me.
You may have been. You might have been. You look.
Yep.
That worked out.
Yeah.
That could have worked out.
So, you know, the other day, the whole thing with the drag queens in Texas, like, I saw, like, there has been zero kids abused with drag queens and hundreds and thousands with priests. And I was like, wow, I honestly would prefer to leave my kid with a drag queen than with a priest. I never thought of that.
And it still goes on today. So, yeah.
Sorry, I didn't mean that.
No, and it's cool. But the ironic thing about, too, the whole Catholicism, and Charles, you can relate to this more than anybody. They have they're liberated to solve their own problems from a legal perspective.
Oh, yeah.
Someone is fine, right? Sure. Which is the craziest shit in the world.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right? And this is not an indictment on religion, right? But we are free to believe what we believe.
It just goes to show how we as a society, we put these, you know, we put these covers and wraps over certain areas of life. And we try to say, okay, we'll let them deal with that.
Right.
Right? As opposed to, you know, let's use the legal system the way it should be for everyone.
For everyone. Mm-hmm.
And the Pope would just keep, you know, there was a documentary. Well, even just the movie, I think Pope. Mm-hmm. It talked about that, and just like the Pope would hide priests, they would just move them to another town, So, you
that
know, like, just to go abuse more kids in that town, and that.
And sometimes the young men and women would follow them.
But you know what I've been told about this, though? Don't let those priests affect your view on the church. Like, don't let, like, pretty much, like,
the
don't let one.
The church.
Yeah, but hold up. So it's like, don't let one bad apple affect your view on this. And I'm like, okay. But then. My parents, my family, believe that Black Lives Matter is a terrorist organization, like Antifa. And so it's like, okay, sure, there's some bad apples with Black Lives Matter. There's some, but you're also letting certain people affect your view on the whole thing. Why not with priests? Why not with Catholicism?
Well,
why
the analogy is a flawed analogy.
Okay.
The premise that Black Lives Matter is a premise regardless of an organization. The church is an organization, mm-hmm. and the priest is a part of that organization. They go hand in hand. Mm-hmm. Black Lives Matter existed prior to a nonprofit,
okay.
right? So Black Lives Matter is a mantra.
Mm-hmm.
When we talk about church and Catholicism and priests, they don't exist without each other.
Mm-hmm.
It's like you can't have a company without a CEO. Right,
yeah.
You can't have you know, any organization without some level of leadership, right? Mm-hmm. And in the church, you would say that, you know, obviously you have your top level leadership with the church, with the priest, and I mean not the priest, but the Pope and the cardinals,
mm-hmm.
right? But then you flow that down to the people in the organization that represent it, which are priests,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah.
So I mean, those actions are. They're representative of the organization at large, right?
Yeah. They are inherently connected.
Mm-hmm.
One doesn't exist.
You can't disconnect them.
Okay. So, yeah, it's a cute analogy, but it doesn't apply. So back to you today.
Mm-hmm.
When we talk about flourishing, and you know, we talk about it distinct from happiness. Happiness is kind of the fleeting feeling of joy. Mm-hmm. One day I'm happy, the next day I don't know what the fuck's going mm-hmm. on. Flourishing is this constant movement forward. Do you feel as if you're flourishing in those critical aspects of life that we talked about, physical, emotional, spiritual, economic? Mm-hmm. And if so, why? If not, why?
Okay. I do feel like I'm flourishing.
Awesome.
And I do feel like experiences like, you know, I guess it is 2 months ago now, all those emotions that I felt, and, you know, I left my job for 5 weeks and also experienced, you know, a heartbreak that was very unexpected. And that I was at a low, but for me, I always think like, what can I learn from this? What, you know, this isn't temporary. I always say like, I always come out stronger, and those experiences, yeah, they help me flourish. I think like, okay, I'm not going to do what I did last month. I'm not going to dwell on that. I'm not going to this. What can I do better this month? I try and set certain goals for myself. Like I try to write things down. Flourishing physically, I do work out. I love to work out. I love to, can I be a little better at it? Yes. But, and then eating as well with that aspect, I work on it. Sometimes I'm just really busy. Like I wake up, especially for school, I make my kids lunch. You make them breakfast as well. Clean up. And then later it's like, make lunch, clean up after that. And then sometimes I'll just like pick and I think that I ate and I didn't. And then I'm driving to work and I'm starving. And then I work an 8-9 hour shift and I, you know, that's all day. But leading back to that, I do feel like I'm flourishing. I feel like, you know, with my sign business, even though I knew that that wasn't always going to be what I wanted to do, I knew it would kind of lead me to, you know, every step kind of leads you to where you're meant to be. And I did. I found that, and I'm excited for that.
That's awesome.
Yeah, business-wise, I think I'm doing well, mentally better, and I'm just trying to create a better life for my kids because I don't want them to go through what I did. And mentally, and even just financially.
Mm-hmm. You call it a sign business. It makes mm-hmm. me think we'll work for food or something like that. It's like, so actually, you're talking about art, right? This is art.
Mm-hmm. It actually would be a good business.
Charles, why?
You see a lot of those signs.
Yeah, you remember you called somebody's me and told gotta me make about them. One. Yeah.
Just land.
So. You know, and I would imagine they're inspirational themes.
Yeah, they can be. Yeah. So I kind of started, I'm very crafty. I love doing, you know.
And how can folks find this art? I guess let's pause there.
Yeah. On Instagram.
Shameless plug.
Yeah, shameless plug, yeah. La Luna Wood Co. I'm on Instagram right now, but I am slowing down at the moment.
Oh, so that's why you said it so fast. You don't want
okay. I'm slowing down right now. I have some last orders I'm working on, but okay. I am trying to focus more on I'm opening a kid's indoor playground. And
okay, congratulations.
Thank you. That's my main thing that I'm working on right now, even just creating like every day, like details, typing up.
Where will that be? Where will it be?
I'm looking for South Chandler. South Chandler's a lot of families down there, you know, like Intel's down there, like sure. Mercedes, all those. So, and I was looking at Gilbert as well, mm-hmm. but we'll see where, you know.
Great locations for what you're trying
fantastic.
To do.
Fantastic. Yes. Yeah, I like it.
But with the signs I do, they're all handmade. I cut the wood, sand the wood, stain the wood. So right now it's hard. It's so hot right now. I was like
all
drenched
yourself.
The other day. Yeah. I do have my ex help me though sometimes. So okay. I need two hands and I have the air compressor at his house, which is my old house. So I'll do everything I can. I have my own saw and my equipment at my sister's house in Phoenix. And then he also has his saw that I can still use.
A woman with a saw. Man. Yeah. That's like pretty dope. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Why not? Who wouldn't like a woman with a saw?
It's cool.
Yeah. You too.
I got that's a sander. Awesome. I got a nail gun. But I do need help with the nail gun. I need, you know, two hands. So this morning I went to go pick up the kids. Hey, I need help nailing all those signs I made because I have an event tomorrow. So I did that, and then that's it. You know, I take the kids, he goes to work. It's very, it works well right now.
That's awesome.
Mm-hmm.
That's so good.
It's exciting. Yeah.
So from a future perspective, you get excited about the indoor playground, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
what was your inspiration for wanting to open that up?
I love my kids so much. I love kids. And I would take the kids to this one indoor playground. But every time, you know, and I've been in the industry for 10 years, like, I'm always nitpicking things, and I always see things that, like, I could do better. Just, like, fingerprints all over the doors. Like, even during COVID, I'm like, clean it. Just spray. Like, you're sitting at the computer, go spray it. Cleanliness inside. So it's, like, I always see, like, well, I want to create a community for moms, for kids, make it clean, make it what I would want, and a place that I want my kids to go to.
Got it.
But it's kind of deeper than that. Like, at that place you go, you pay your admission, you can either go be with your kids and play with them, but it's super just like, okay, bye, have fun. For me, I do want it to be a community where moms come in, like, we know each other, or I can meet them there. We have certain events, like classes, and just know that they can have someone there to talk to if they're going through stuff, have meetings there, and just a place where you can take your kids. And it'll be a bit clean and more modern.
I love it. I love it. Yeah. Mediocrity creates a lot of millionaires.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah. And I've always told my mom that. They would always laugh at me. I was like, I'm going to be a millionaire one day. And they just are like, okay. But, you know, any idea they have, like, all right. But it's just... So it's hard because I always feel like I have to do things by myself, and it just takes me longer. But I try not to compare my timeline with other people.
Well, as you put yourself in more flourishing situations, less and less do you have to make decisions by yourself.
Yeah.
Right. But when you're operating in that kind of self-preservation mode, you're making a lot of decisions on your own.
Mm-hmm.
Or with other people operating in self-preservation.
Yeah.
So we have a few minutes left.
Mm-hmm.
Is there anything you wish we had asked you, or anything you want to ask us?
No, I just think that like, my message to people, especially women and Latina women, is just to not let, you know, those boundaries, that culture, that toxic, you know, toxicity, is that a word?
Mm-hmm.
Just don't let that get to you. Don't let that make you feel like you're stuck. You know, I would have people tell me all the time, like, my dad told me I was ruining my family. He's like, why are you ruining the family?
By doing what?
By leaving my ex. Because we were having a conversation one night saying that, you know, I'm trying to get him to sell the house, or we're going to do a refinance. Like, I'm going to get paid out for it. Because there was never really an option. He was always just like, well, I'm keeping the house. This is my house. I said, okay.
Because I always knew. Was it his house, or was it?
Ours. We both bought it. So it was under both of our names. But you would think, like, oh, I messed up the relationship. You know, she's a great mom. I'm going to let her keep the house with my kids so that they have a home. But for me, I was just like, you know what? I know that I want to create my own future, a new future, fresh start. Give me the money. I know I want to buy a business soon. So I was blessed in that aspect that I did have that. You know, I had a great job with great income. I got paid out for my home. So I am blessed and maybe privileged in that area. But just for other women too, it's like, I feel like they're stuck in a relationship because of financial issues. And that's where it's tough. That's where I would love to be of help to somebody. And my end goal after the Playhouse, like, I would love to open a women's shelter. That is my end goal one day.
Well, you are being of help by, A, having the courage to have this conversation.
Mm-hmm.
And they're listening.
Mm-hmm.
And I think anything you decide you want to do, you can do. And whether that's a shelter or a business that mm-hmm. employs women, whatever it is, I think you can do whatever you want to do. So I think that message will be heard, undoubtedly. Is there anything you would like to ask us? We're not forcing you to ask questions, but we're giving you the opportunity to.
Did you guys grow up with, like, a similar, you know, and, like, is black culture different from Mexican culture with, you know?
It's definitely different.
Yeah, it's definitely different. It's different. Mm-hmm. I think some of the themes are, particularly around family,
mm-hmm.
I think are pretty synonymous in a lot of ways. But I think it's different in terms of, like, Catholicism is a different thing. Mm-hmm. We don't have a lot of that, relatively speaking, obviously, yeah. Depending on where you were raised. Mm-hmm. But I would say there's things that are similar and obviously things that are very different.
Yeah.
It just depends.
Okay.
Yeah, I think part of the similarity is, for me, I grew up Methodist.
Mm-hmm.
And I grew up in a Methodist church.
Okay.
AME?
AME. Mm-hmm. That was the move, wasn't it?
Yeah, that's what my mother was AME, raised.
Man.
Yeah, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. And again, it was a room full of black people worshiping a white God.
Okay. Does that feel wrong to you?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And it felt wrong at a young age and feels wrong today. Mm-hmm. And once that started to crystallize for me, it became a challenge with mm-hmm. some folks in my family who that's the world that they grew up in, right? So that said, yeah, there are definitely some similarities, mm-hmm. But there are also some differences. I think part of the similarity is being an immigrant coming to this country, okay. as your mom did, mm-hmm. and feeling like you have to acclimate.
Mm-hmm. Assimilate.
Yeah. Right, or assimilate.
Mm-hmm.
I think my ancestors that I know were born here under conditions mm-hmm. that were oppressive. So it's a bit of a different dynamic, but yeah. sometimes the behaviors play out in a similar way.
Okay.
So, yeah, it's deep. It's deep as hell.
Yeah.
But I can't thank you enough for, you know, being here today, because it, I think we can all underestimate the impact you can have on it. But for example, we had Mila on the show, mm-hmm. and she watched that episode, mm-hmm. and we talked about that episode. She's also a Mexican American. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the fact that even Mila was here, not knowing what it would all mean, and you watched that episode,
mm-hmm.
and we talked about it, the same thing will happen with you. You know, there will be women of all races who can identify with a part of your journey.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that you're here today saying, hey, I'm a single mom, I'm an entrepreneur, I'm in the hospitality industry, I'm a server. But the biggest thing, I am somebody who has made a decision that I'm going to flourish.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's the message for all of us.
Men and women.
Yeah, yes. Men and women. Yeah. Men and women. That's mm-hmm. critically important. Critically important, because there are young men who will be inspired by your story mm-hmm. as well. So I wouldn't underestimate that mm-hmm. either. So, yeah. Again, no more questions unless you have them. You can ask us whatever you want.
No,
we got a few
just,
more minutes, but
That's pretty much it. Just the message that I want to give out, that there's always help out there too, and I want to be able to provide that, and just don't let those boundaries keep you down. Like,
that's
as hard
so
as it is, my parents hate when I speak out and I call them out on their bullshit. And they think I'm crazy.
Yeah.
But you just got to do it. And if it doesn't feel right, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And at least deal with something feeling right or wrong on your own terms.
Yeah.
Right.
Exactly.
Not somebody else's terms.
Because mm-hmm. I do feel really proud of myself. I feel really, really proud of myself. I feel so proud of my sister for living her life and getting married. And, you know, it was hard not having our parents there and my sister there, my middle sister. But being there next to her, like, was the best thing in the whole world.
Well, they're the ones missing out.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah.
So I tell her all the time that I'm really proud of us. And, you know, she's going to create her family with her wife. And, like, so I always say it's up to us now. It's up to us to create the type of family and, like, raise our kids and the accepting
that
you know
want.
Yeah, even yeah. with race. Like, my kids mm-hmm. have pajamas with a black Santa on it, because it's just
that's awesome.
Yeah, it's I tell them all the time, like, people look different. We read a lot of books about that. So just gotta love each other.
What's his name, the Santa Claus?
I don't know.
You had to ask that question, did you?
What?
Wait, what's
well,
the
no,
name?
Well, no, I have black Santas in my house. Just
and they have names?
I like to see people look at me like,
you have the name?
Yeah, they do have
what's Santa's name? Daryl?
Right? I think that might be the name.
Probably.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
I'm
going
to keep that to myself.
Yeah, I bet.
But, yeah, thank you guys for having me and letting me speak about this. So.
Awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's been a pleasure having you.
Thank you.
And thank you for being with us on The Conscious Vibe. Appreciate that.
Thank you.
And thank you for joining us on The Conscious Vibe.
Thank you for joining us.
And check us out on tcvpodcast.com.